Welcome back to Canucks Talk here on Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here. Dranser is off to the airport. He's headed to Edmonton to cover Game 6 between the Canucks and the Oilers tomorrow. Of course, Canucks with a chance to advance to the Western Conference Finals after a big Game 5 win last night. Canucks Talk is brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at dleamc.com. I am live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet? What are you waiting for? 650. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Now joining me, he said he was going to be here in studio with me, but instead he's on the phone. From the People Show and, of course, the post-game show here on Sportsnet 650, he is Bick Nizar. Bick, what's going on, man? Did you pull a Scotty Scheffler this morning or something? What's happening?
Well, no, I didn't. That's a great reference, though. No, I'm blaming traffic. That's what I'm going to do. I'm going to take no accountability on this.
Who could have predicted there would be traffic in Metro Vancouver? Wow. Oh, traffic!
I don't drive usually, so I gave up. I was like, yeah, 33 minutes to Coquitlam to Vancouver, no problem. And, yeah.
Ah, man. You got to send Barra the I'm sorry text, like JT, to Rick Tocchet after Game 4.
We joked about that last night on the post game. It's like JT's now set the worst precedent for employees across the province.
Yeah, that's true. You have to. You have to send that apology text now. You got to live up to the JT Miller standard.
Apparently, like, if you're listening right now and you're in sales or something like that and you blow a sale, you go apologize. That means the next day you're going to make the biggest sale of your career.
Apparently. I got to say, though, also from JT's perspective, you know, he's made the jokes about Connor Garland being the teacher's pet for Tocchet, right? Like the star pupil.
Sure.
That joke's out the window now. You can't use that chirp anymore.
Rick Tocchet just has an apple at the press conference next to him. He's like, JT brought me an apple.
Yeah, JT brought this for me. No, it's no big deal. He just knows I like apples. He's just that kind of guy. All right, so I will cut you some slack because I know you guys put in an extra shift on the post-game show last night.
Yeah.
It went to like 12:40, 12:45. And, man, just what a massive night. What a massive game, right? Like, biggest game at Rogers Arena in so, so long. The crowd was red hot off the bat, just like absolutely on fire. The Canucks fall down 1-0, but both the team and the crowd, I thought, did such a good job of sticking with it, you know, playing their way into the game for the team and then eventually taking over in the second period.
Yeah, and you need moments from the crowd as well, right? And Shelaws has a massive save on Connor Brown, right? And they just get that goal and you think, all right, how is the crowd supposed to respond? And the crowd was into it, but they were provided moments as well. So it's a big save by Shelaws. Pedersen, you know, people were chanting the Let's Go Petey set up by the morning show. And, you know, he has a couple of shifts there. Those centering passes to Hoglander and Lindholm, you can just kind of feel it growing. And then Soucy just, like, blows it off. And I know the goal came right after, but even just that little sense of belief, like, last night was just unreal through the crowd. Just the fact that it was provided and Soucy gets that goal, and it never really subsided after that.
Yeah, and even with that gut punch after, right, which is usually such a tough emotional blow for teams and for the crowd, right, to concede immediately after you score a goal to tie it up like that. And instead it was, you know, as I said, they really just took over the game after that, from that point on. Elias Pettersson, you mentioned him, and, you know, of course, there was the Let's Go Petey movement from Halford and Brough. You heard it in the building. Easily his best game of the playoffs, looked just so much more dangerous, so much more dynamic with the puck. How close was that to you to kind of where he needs to be for this team going forward?
Yeah, he was more urgent. I feel like there were a couple of games that was maybe on par. Like he scored in a game. So I think because of the narrative of, like, hey, he was actually moving his feet and got to play with more established wingers, or line mates, that, like, maybe we're conflating everything and saying, like, that was his best game. It was certainly an improvement. But he just looked more urgent. And, you know, one thing, it just looked like he had more space to operate in. And maybe that's the Lindholm effect, because he can hang on to a puck more than the other guys. But I think he was more noticeable because he just had a little bit more space to create. And certainly on the power play, I like that little shift of putting JT in front. And maybe that took a few eyes off Pedersen. He was able to activate that pass down low, and we saw a couple times JT with that spinning take right to the net. But, it, like, that to me was the biggest thing. It's, he was active and moving all over the place, and certainly with the physical contact that was probably not a penalty. But it was just nice to see. And it felt like a little weight off his shoulders, too, I imagine, of, you know, like, it's not all on me for some of the offensive creation. And I thought, like, him and Lindholm paired really well together, something that didn't necessarily work at first, albeit injury or whatever, for Lindholm. But it just looked a little bit cleaner yesterday.
Yeah, and Lindholm was really, really good last night as well. We can talk about his role in the penalty kill, too. But, you know, I'd add, he's obviously the third guy on this line, but it was clearly Nils Höglander's best game of the playoffs as well. Like, he looked much more comfortable out there. And I think that trio in general, I mean, they played a bunch against Leon Draisaitl. They did really well in that matchup. They looked consistently dangerous. Huge to get Pettersson going. Obviously, that's first and foremost, but for Lindholm to keep having success in a new spot, and then for Höglander's game to come along as well, you know, all of a sudden that really changes the dynamic and the complexion of the Canucks forward group.
Yeah, and just the idea that Höglander was, like, the natural player on a line, because when he's been paired with Pettersson and Mikheyev, you kind of need Höglander to be the default goal scorer on that line, because Mikheyev is the natural forechecker, the digger. And, you know, Höglander can score goals, but it's all, like, in and around the net, rebound opportunities. He's not necessarily an off-the-puck, you know, get-it-and-rip-it type player. And then yesterday, you just, like, be the guy that goes after the puck. And it just looked way easier for him. And he gets really unlucky on that off-the-face-off play where, like, I think Pettersson intentionally knocks that across to him. And, you know, if he buries that one, he's the hero last night. He goes off picker, goes off the post. And, you know, just an unlucky circumstance. But, yeah, certainly his best game as well, especially coming off of, you know, being out of the lineup, Ritaka challenges with a bunch of guys, same passengers. You couldn't put in a passenger performance, not just because you were scratched, but also because of what Rick Tocchet said for a bunch of players the night before as well. So, massive game and good on Nils Höglander taking advantage of an opportunity created by the others.
Yeah, there were definitely no passengers last night. And, you know, I was thinking about it before the series. I went back. Remember early in Rick Tocchet's tenure when he took them to, like, hockey school 101, right, with the practice and broke it down, like, all the way to the most basic levels of how he wanted them to play in the defensive zone. And I kind of made analogy of, okay, starting from, like, hockey grade school, they've been advancing through the curriculum of Rick Tocchet hockey. And I said before the series they needed to have their PhD thesis statement of Canucks Rick Tocchet hockey in this series against the Oilers. That's what last night felt like. Like, that felt like the most pure, best example of them playing how Rick Tocchet wants them to play, of them playing Canucks hockey that we've seen this year. I mean, obviously they've had more dominant performances on the scoreboard, but when you consider the competition and the stakes, I think that's the best performance they've had under Rick Tocchet.
Yeah, I mean, I would argue it's something I'm going to talk about my show. I'm sure you guys have talked about it too, but just in general, like, the overall vibe and everything for that game, like, that might've been the best game in 13 years.
Oh, 100%. 100%.
Yeah, and it requires a performance befitting of that sort of title. And yeah, like, Rick Tocchet has taken steps, and it was one of the things going to the playoffs that I was, you know, excited to keep an eye on, not just the players, but also, you know, like, what is Rick Tocchet like as a head coach? Not just as a button pusher, which he's been so good at, obviously, but the tactical game-to-game adjustments that he's going to have to do. And yesterday was the first one where it was really pushed to making some decisions, some big lineup decisions. Everything else has been injury or suspension influence. This was, okay, I'm going to make a big call here, and we're going to change some things up. And how is it going to relate to defending not just the best player in the world, but, like, two of the best four? And it all worked yesterday. And that stretch right before the Soucy goal, when they started to open it up and play fast, and to their credit, like, the guys really skated and outskated Edmonton from basically, you know, 10 minutes into the first period for basically the rest of the game. And that to me is, like, what a credit to what Rick Tocchet has done. And at some point, like, look, Connor McDavid has lost rounds before, but if they pull this off tomorrow or even by game 7, there's going to be a sentient teaching tape for a lot of coaches to say, all right, this is part of the game plan now, that what Vancouver did against Connor McDavid.
Yeah, no doubt about it. I mean, I'm sure you saw the tweet that was going around that just per expected goals. And, you know, you could, in a one-game sample, expected goals not always the most reliable thing to look at. But per his expected goals share for Connor McDavid at 5-on-5, his worst game since November 2nd, 2019. So it's been a long, long time since he was.
Oh, wow. I had not seen that.
Yeah,
that's unreal.
It was Paul Peduti of Adjusted Hockey had the stat out there. It was like he had like a 16% share of expected goals. And even if you don't trust expected goals, it was like he was outshot 8-3, right? So, I mean, it's been a long time since you've seen Connor McDavid be that ineffective in terms of driving play and generating and tilting the ice for his team as the Canucks forced him to be in that game. Now, the other part of his course, those are the 5-on-5 numbers. They also shut them out on the power play. And, I mean, I said this earlier in the show, but imagine, like, we do this exercise a lot, right? Like, go back in time however long you want and say, hey, can you believe the Canucks would be here? Can you believe Rick Tocchet would have them doing this? Can you believe Connor Garland would have this role on the team, et cetera, et cetera? Well, go back to, like, December when Bruce Boudreau was still coaching this team, like December 2022, and the penalty kill was one of the worst of all time in NHL history, and say, flash forward 18 months, the Canucks PK will be holding the historically dangerous Edmonton power play off the score sheet in a pivotal game five in the playoffs. Like, what a turnaround. What an effort for that unit and all the guys on it last night.
Yeah, I haven't rewatched the game yet because I usually like to do an AM rewatch. I haven't had a chance. I feel like I'll never understand how they went 5-for-5. Right? Like, given the context of what you just said and the historically bad power play and the improvement this year, but not like top three. Like, they were what, 14th, 15th this year?
They were like average. Yeah, it wasn't like they turned into an elite PK during the regular season.
They were okay. But the fact that they went 5-for-5, on top of like having to overcome some weird penalties, so just the mental framework of like, seriously, this is happening again and we got to do this against these guys all over again, to shut it down and put clamps on the Oilers' power play is like that's the thing I'm never going to understand. And like, the margins are so thin against McDavid and Draisaitl. And like, go back to the last game where Joshua and Cole kind of mix up. And look, it's okay to be aggressive if you're Dakota Joshua in that play in game four, but it's such a fine margin that Connor McDavid can just blow open and get to the middle of the ice. Yeah, yesterday, like, Shelov was fantastic, obviously, on the PK. He needed to be, and there was a couple of moments, but the guys in front of him just, they were aggressive, and they fell back to the right spots. Blueger covered really well on a couple of plays where three guys were up along the walls, and it's those little, like, details on PK and being willing to sacrifice that comes up in a big way for Vancouver yesterday, because they certainly don't get that result if they don't go 5-for-5.
No, absolutely not, right? And, you know, you felt like maybe to win the series, they were going to have that type of performance against the Oilers' power play at some point, right? Like, it's just so hard to win a series if the power play is getting on the other team's power play is getting on the board
literally every game. I never thought they'd have a perfect game in the series on the PK.
Well, I thought it might be like the Oilers go 0 for 2 or something, you know what I mean? Like, 0 for 5 would have felt like a stretch for me, but I could see, especially later in the series, just one, them killing them off, but lack of opportunities for the Oilers. But this surpassed my expectations, for sure.
I thought, like, the best grade of a night would be, like, 1-for-5.
Yeah.
And, like, my thing coming into the series was, can you just contain the power play to one or two games max? I don't really care if they go 7-for-14, but it was more about, can you just keep it to one game? And the game two was kind of the one. I was like, all right, that's the mulligan, and then they get away with that. But the fact that they've been good in 2-3 games, you can make an argument for, that's something I was not prepared for.
Yeah, no kidding. Especially, man, considering how that Oilers power play looks when it is at the top of its game. And, you know, a huge part of the Canucks PK last night was Elias Lindholm, right? And he's out there taking the draws, so he's in the toughest penalty-killing minutes. I think they had 2 shot attempts against in his minutes out there, almost 4 on the PK, which is really just incredible. And then you look at what that line has done or did last night 5-on-5, and, you know, all told, Lindholm played like 22 minutes. All of a sudden, he's one of the 2 or 3 forwards that this team relies on the most. And for all of the talk of, you know, how much of an awkward fit it was and he's out injured in the regular season, we always knew he had the opportunity to completely change how we look at his time in Vancouver in the playoffs. And it's the goal scoring, but it's just like to me, the thing that stands out is how much Rick Tocchet relies on him, how much Rick Tocchet trusts him and wants to play him. And he has done exactly that. He has completely changed how we're going to remember Lindholm's time as a Canuck.
Oh, the minute-to-minute reliability for Lindholm has been huge. And the game-winning goal, like JT shouted it out, that patience that he has on that play, there's 35 seconds left, right? And you can see McDavid's like ready to jump on a pass to JT Miller as the trailer. And from our vantage point on press row, it looked very obvious to make that pass. And the fact that he doesn't, McDavid slightly hedges towards that passing lane and, more importantly, stops his feet. And then suddenly that put the puck towards the net, JT gets to the net before McDavid, just because that slight hesitation of Lindholm just basically just doing a pump fake, like he's Peyton Manning or something, and it opens up the scene for JT Miller. Like, a play like that, massive, and it was great shout-out by JT Miller pointing that out. But, yeah, you're right. Like, the PK face-offs, the D-zone face-offs, when you have to go out there against Draisaitl, something I was talking about before the series, he'd gone 60% against Draisaitl during the year between Calgary and Vancouver, and it's shown up through the series. He has been massive in those key moments. I talked about it with you, face-offs. It was really huge.
Yeah, you're... Last time I had you on, you're like, I want to see lots of face-offs in this series. And somebody texted in here. Somebody texted in and was like, Bick is so deranged. She's the only person who's ever wanted more whistles in a playoff hockey game. But you've got your wish.
Y'all laughing at me. Hey, do you want to do the dumbest thing ever right now?
Yeah. Are you going to come in studio because you finally got here? You beat traffic
and
got here?
I'm right in the parkade. Can you rag the puck for 90 seconds?
Yeah, I can rag the puck for 90 seconds. You can hang up.
Let's go. Okay.
Hang up. Come on. Finally, drag your butt in here as you were supposed to do 15 minutes. All right. Bick will join me in studio momentarily here. 650-650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Colin from the Caribou text, and I think the Canucks PK hammered in the Konami code before puck drop to match the Oilers Game Genie code for their power play. Yeah, as Bick said, like, look, you could have sold me on, hey, can you hold them for 0-2, right? A really tight, no whistles game. You keep them off the power play through a lack of opportunity, partly through some good fortune, and you get your opportunity there. I could have bought that. 0-5, right? And that moment where in a close game, you have all the momentum and even strength in the second period, and you just keep getting these calls go against you. Fans are furious. It would have been so easy against that power play to buckle a little bit, to make that one crucial mistake, and the momentum of the game completely flips. For them to do it in that situation specifically, with the volume of kind of consecutive opportunities that they had to kill off for Edmonton, that's what makes it really, really stand out. And, you know, we referenced Lindholm. Obviously, Rick Tocchet was talking about Tyler Myers as well, and just what a beast he was on the penalty kill. And again, you know, the Canucks' defensive depth really showing out there, because Ian Cole, his minutes seriously reduced at even strength and on the penalty kill last night. We all know he's struggling in this series. There's no sugarcoating it, but the Canucks have the luxury of, even with Ian Cole not playing, kind of sliding into that sixth defenseman sheltered minutes role, you have five guys that you can throw out there in a lot of different combinations. And we saw that, right? We saw, you know, Quinn Hughes and Nikita Zadorov on the ice, Philip Hronek and Nikita Zadorov on the ice together, Quinn Hughes, Tyler Myers. They really leaned on them. And that's the value of the defensive depth they have. Even once you say, okay, Ian Cole, we're really going to limit your minutes, we're going to put you in protected situations out there, you have five guys that, you know, there's all these different combinations and way you can send them out in any situation. You don't have to worry like, uh-oh, is this guy going to get caught out there against McDavid? Is this guy going to get caught out there against Leon Draisaitl? And I think that's been a huge part of the Canucks' success so far in this series, in the postseason in general, is just it's hard to find that like weak spot on the defense, on the blue line, that the opposing coach can target, that the opposing coach can feel like, okay, this is where we need to get our guys out there, our best players out there, because the Canucks coaching staff just has full confidence in all of them, even though Ian Cole obviously testing that a little bit right now. But I do expect that we'll see Ian Cole still in the lineup next game, game six. I want to get into it with Bick a little bit here as he opens the door. I don't know why, though. Bick just opened the door, and I just, like, jolted, even though I knew he was coming. I was fully expecting it. It was like a shock, somebody breaking into my house there. But here he is in studio, Bick Nizar, for like 4 minutes.
I feel like Elliot Friedman. That was a car cast right there.
It was a car cast, and we transitioned
into the studio version
yeah.
of the show. Okay.
What did I miss?
Nothing. Pure ragging the puck energy.
I was almost tuned into the app for the 30-second walk-up.
And you're like, nah, it's not going to be anything.
I wonder what I missed.
You didn't miss much. But what I was talking about was I find the dynamic now going into Game 6 really, really fascinating because you know we all saw how limited and ineffective Connor McDavid was last night.
Sure.
Now, you got to think he's going to be much, much better than that in Game 6, but how much are the minutes catching up to him? Tim Peel's tweeting about a possible injury. Yeah. Like, how much does he have left to give is my big question. You're going to see it on Saturday. Mm-hmm. Like, we're going to get an answer to that, right? But as much as the Canucks need to find what they did well last night, transfer to Edmonton, transfer to Game 6, like, I'm also just so curious, how much does Connor McDavid have left to give for the Oilers? And if the answer is not that much, that's a troubling situation.
Yeah, the thing that was surprising to me yesterday was 23 minutes for him. Was it 22:54 for Draisaitl or 23? Somewhere around that range. You know, we've seen 28-29 regularly. I get it was a tie game.
Mm-hmm.
But with the way the game was going for long stretches, I'm surprised Draisaitl and McDavid didn't get paired together much earlier. So, you know, we're talking about the job Chris or Rick Tocchet had done. That to me was maybe a bit of a misstep by Chris Knobloch.
But did he feel like they had it in them? That's my question, right? Because he's already played that card a bunch earlier in the series.
Right, but what other card does he have? His best card is pairing those two guys together. He did it for a stretch.
And I wonder if the thinking from Knobloch was like, okay, our backs aren't against the wall yet. As you said, this is a tie game in the third period.
Yeah.
I'm going to save that for when it's actual desperation time on home ice.
If you're starting a game, I get that. You're in a tie game in the third period.
Go out and try to win it.
What are you saving it for? We'll do it next
time. I just
don't
think McDavid had the juice to handle it. Like, I don't think you were getting much if you decided to, you know, play him 10 minutes in the third period last night or 12 minutes like they did in Game 3.
Connor McDavid at 70%, still better than...
Warren Fogle?
No offense to, like, name your guy, but I think you just got to do that. But that's also the reason why you don't play your best card after Game 2.
That's what I was saying earlier in the series, right?
Yeah.
Like, especially in Game 3 because they loaded up the minutes so much and they didn't win. So it's like, okay, now you've spent a chip here and you didn't even get anything to show for it, right? And who knows? Look, maybe Connor McDavid comes out and plays 28 minutes and is amazing on Saturday. You never know. It could easily
Depending
happen.
Depending game state, I would put the over-under at 28 minutes.
Whew. I mean, their season's on the line.
What are they saving it for?
No.
Unless they're up 4-0.
Yeah.
And they're like, all right, we can limit this down. What evidence is there to suggest he won't play 27 minutes?
You pretty much have to.
Yeah.
Like, not pretty much. You literally have to. This is it.
They're on the brink. And not only just on the brink, they're on the brink of, like, massive things.
Big decisions.
Huge.
Leon Draisaitl, eligible for an extension in July.
This whole series was supposed to be a coronation for them. That's why, what was it, 95% of the people?
Yep.
That's why Ryan Clark is a hero in this city all of a sudden, which, well-deserved, does fantastic work.
We're calling him. Have you seen Dune 2?
No.
Oh,
Lisan
Al-Ghaib.
I did see somebody with that sign for She Loves at Game 2. I thought that was great.
That's pretty good. That's pretty good.
Okay. That's pretty good.
We're playing the music drop and for
oh, really?
Everything for him.
Why'd you tune in more?
He hates it.
Oh, okay. That's great. But yeah, it was meant to be kind of a coronation, and the Canucks were there to upset the script, and you embrace that underdog thing, and here they are, one game away.
It would really be the perfect way for the Oilers season to end after the Canucks bodied them in the first two games of the season, and really especially in the season opener.
Yes.
For like that foreshadowing to come back and kill their season at the end of it.
Look, this series has been kind of a storyline series too.
Oh yeah,
for exactly that, right? Like JT Miller apologizes, scores the next game, PDG, all these things, the Tyler Myers redemption tour, Pedersen, all these things, Shelovs comes in against Skinner, against
Pickard,
and like it's backup versus backup and coach fired versus taking over versus the other coach that took over, and it's all these storylines embedded into this series, and yet exactly what you said, the foreshadowing of Game 1, October 13th.
It all comes back to Game 1. Everything you needed to know about where these teams were going was contained in that game. Okay, Bick, thank you for hustling up to the studio. I appreciate it. Thank
and
you
I
for
did it safely.
This.
I didn't speed to get here. I
appreciate you hanging out with me. But I have to kick you out because Dmitry's coming in studio next.
All right.
So, bye. Thanks for doing it. Okay, Dmitry Filipovich wraps up the show with me next here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650. Welcome back to Canucks Talk Sportsnet 650. Jamie Dodd here with you live from the Kintech Studio. 650 is the Dunbar Lumber text line. Dunbar Lumber with three stores to serve you in Ladner on Bridge Street, or Dunbar Lumber Express at Ladner Center, or Arbutus in Vancouver online at dunbarlumber.com. Now joining me in studio, as always at this time on a Friday, from the Hockey PDO cast, he is Dmitry Filipovich. What's going on, man?
Jamie, what's going on, man? It's a lovely Friday. It's sunny out there.
Yeah, it's beautiful. It's a long weekend coming up for a lot of people. We'll be on Monday. I appreciate you coming on. I know you've been grinding out some PDO casts for the listeners.
I just
the last
had
couple
to,
hours.
You know, a little peek behind the curtain of how the sausage is made here at Sportsnet 650.
No
one wants to see that. Certainly, yeah, I know that sounded weird coming out of my mouth. I just had Harmon Dial, who I'm sure the listeners also enjoy his work covering this team, in the side studio while you were recording the start of the show. We banged out a PDO cast that they'll be able to hear soon. That kind of recapped this series as a whole, but also Game 5 in particular. And I realized it was 1:30. And I just kicked him out of that studio, ran in here, and we're good to go. So it's fresh on my mind.
I had to kick Bick out. You had to kick Harmon out. We were like, no, we have to do this.
There we go.
No Drance, but we still got to do
our
segment.
Nothing was keeping us apart.
That's right. It's not the weekend for me until I see you. You're my signal for that. It's like, okay, I'm done.
That's such a beautiful thing to be associated with. Thank you, Jamie. That's the kindest thing anyone said to me.
I'm not joking. I have like a Pavlovian response to talking to you.
Just
in this studio. I'm like,
you do smile every time you see me.
No, I'm like, I'm always over the moon. Yep. I'm like, working week almost done. Yep. Okay, as you mentioned, you were just talking to Harm, and I know Harm had the great, great piece up at The Athletic today, looking specifically, dialing in on how the Canucks were able to slow down Connor McDavid. And, you know, I've read the stat a bunch of times, but like one of his most ineffective nights, really, of his career at 5-on-5 in that game. What stood out to you watching it, talking to Harm a little bit about the way the Canucks approached it and what they did successfully to slow him down?
Yeah, I mean, it's always going to take a team effort. And also, I think you have to go into that battle acknowledging that regardless of what you do, he's going to get opportunities. Yep. You can't really fully stop him or shut him down. You can only kind of not hope to contain him, but just make life difficult for him. And I think the Canucks have unequivocally done that. You look at the head-to-head matchup in particular where JT Miller's been out with him, and it's about half of McDavid's 5-on-5 minutes in this series. 47 minutes head-to-head, 5-on-5. The Canucks are up 2-0 in that time. They've kept Edmonton completely off the board scoring-wise. And you see it. He's always staying above the puck. He's been so diligent in terms of maintaining that positioning, playing within the playoff rules of whenever the puck's not there, a little nudge here or there to kind of throw him off his stride. I think in particular off the opening draw in Game 5, they drop the puck, faceoff happens, a little cross-check to just kind of knock him off. You know, that's kind of the beauty of the playoffs, right? I'm sure Edmonton fans are watching that and being like, all right, this is very frustrating. These are all interference plays. That stuff never really gets called. It does occasionally, but for the most part, I think these guys, particularly veterans, kind of know what they can get away with, and they walk right up to that line. And so you're seeing that there, and I think it's a perfect execution of the game plan. They've been very disciplined in that approach, and this is a team that's been strong defensively at executing that structure all year, and that's kind of what you're seeing in this head-to-head, and so it's no surprise that they're having the success they are.
Yeah, it's been their bread and butter really all year, and especially in these playoffs. I mean, I thought they were excellent in the defensive zone against Nashville, certainly, and much tougher task, but a lot of that has carried over against Edmonton. And, you know, you talk about JT Miller and what a job he's done in this matchup, and obviously the center is always going to get, you know, the most credit, right? We frame it as the JT Miller versus Connor McDavid matchup, but I do want to give a shout out, without taking anything away from Miller, to Brock Besser as well, right? Because obviously, this is such a cliche, but one guy is not going to shut down Connor McDavid, right? It needs to be all five guys. You need to have defensively responsible wingers you trust as well. And Besser, you know, it's not just the 40 goal season, the way he's scored all these clutch goals in the playoffs, but just he's become so incredibly reliable. And I know he featured in some of the clips Harm broke down as well that, yeah, it's not just JT Miller, it's Brock Besser, it's Pugh Suter too, just kind of seemingly always being in the right place to slow down McDavid, to limit his options on the puck.
Well, particularly with a guy like McDavid who's going to leverage the attention that he draws to set up his teammates, right? And so what happens is you see it on the power play certainly very often where he's skating around all four guys are watching him, and then all of a sudden Draisaitl's kind of open back door and he's able to get that one timer going. That's what they want to do at 5-on-5, and that's where it's incumbent on a guy like Besser, and you saw it in game five a couple times where he is there to knock away any pass that comes to a Ryan Nugent-Hopkins or to a Zach Hyman and sort of nullify that sort of sequence that otherwise might be a scoring chance. So yeah, it's not just necessarily about being on McDavid and making sure he doesn't shake free, but being there for wherever the pass is going. And they've taken away a lot of those options from him, and that must be incredibly frustrating because we saw McDavid score the breakaway goal in game two. And certainly, like, if he gets out in the rush and on the move, he can just take it coast to coast himself. But he generally prefers to be more of a distributor and a playmaker in that sense. And so without any real outlets to go to, it must be frustrating for him because I just don't think he's necessarily wired to be a player that's like kind of like Nathan MacKinnon, where he's just going to put his head down and just do it all himself. Like, that's just not really the way he plays when he's at his best.
Yeah. And as you mentioned, right, he can wind up with speed and he's so dangerous then going through the neutral zone. And, you know, we're talking a lot about the defensive zone coverage from the Canucks, but a huge part of it is just like not letting it get to that point, right? Doing what you can so he doesn't just pick up the puck and carve through you coast to coast. And they've been doing a pretty good job of that as well.
The forecheck was phenomenal in game five. There were so many times where the Oilers just weren't able to get out of their zone. They forced turnovers and they got chances off of it. And we should note here, like, Matthias Ekholm is seems like he's sick, and so that's why he played less. He only played 18 minutes or so in game five, down from 23-24. He was regularly playing at the start of the series. And so with him not being at his best, Bouchard struggled. He was responsible for that turnover on the field, the Giuseppe goal off the forecheck we're talking about. And so when that top pairing is struggling, that directly impacts both McDavid and Draisaitl because they kind of work as a five-man unit at times when they load up that team, even at 5-on-5. And then without them operating, all of a sudden it's like, well, of course, CeCe and Nurse and Desharnais are going to struggle moving the puck, and so they don't really have any outlet for getting out of their zone. And that's kind of what you saw in Game 5, and that's very troublesome from Edmonton's perspective because it's kind of a recurring theme for them.
Well, and especially because I know they split up the very troublesome, to say the least, Cody CeCe.
Well, depending on your perspective.
Yeah, it's true. I was like, that's one reason you should take the unders, because that pairing is no longer together. But they split them up and that's worked. But then still so much of their defense relies on Bouchard gets so much of the attention because of the points, but like it's the pairing of Ekholm and Bouchard that needs to be at the absolute top of its game. And if it's not effective, the other pairings are like working, but they're not going to dominate. They're not going to tilt the ice for you.
Well, especially in game four, they finally made that change, right? Chris Knobloch split the two up. Darnell Nurse played down to 16 minutes in game four, which was like he's been averaging around 19-20 before that. And then now with Ekholm not at 100% and playing 18 himself, all of a sudden Nurse in game five is back to 19 and a half minutes. Mm-hmm. He's on the ice for two goals against at 5-on-5, which brings him up to just an absolutely preposterous stat right now. Where in this series, the Canucks have scored 11 5-on-5 goals. Darnell Nurse has been on the ice for 8 of them. It's really hard to do. It's generally not so simple. I know you guys on this show have had conversations about how just because you're on the ice doesn't mean you're necessarily directly responsible. I think
when a pattern starts to build,
it's 8 out of 11 in a series and you've played less than a third of the minutes, I think it's fair to start questioning the player involved.
Yeah, even with a fancy stat like that, goal differential, I think we can give that.
Yeah, I really dug deep there in the analytics. Yeah,
classic analytics argument. Remind me though, is that what you want from the guy who's making $9.25 million through 2030? When you're like, we have to reduce his minutes to win this series.
No, it's certainly
not ideal.
And Harm was making the point on my show about how like the puck movement and the turnovers are one thing, but the Canucks have really targeted a guy like CeCe in particular on these battles down low where they're just like physically winning the puck from him and then creating chances off of it. Even undersized guys like Connor Garland are just using their skating ability and their energy to kind of muscle him off the puck. And that must be so frustrating for Oilers fans who had to hear about how a guy like Sean Walker wouldn't have been an upgrade on that because he's not physically capable enough for the postseason. And then you're just watching this play out and you're like, I'm pretty sure he could have done this.
Chris Tanev also wouldn't have been a significant upgrade on Cody CeCe.
I think insert right shot defenseman would have been an upgrade. So yeah, it's a tough look.
It is a very, very tough look. Okay, another guy under the microscope, obviously, always here in Vancouver, especially going into game five last night, was Elias Pettersson. Mm. And I mean, you saw the performance in game four, like the consistent lack of impact, the criticism from Rick Tocchet, his press conference on Wednesday, which was just tough to watch for a lot of different reasons, then the chance ahead of last night's game. And I thought he played really, really well. I'm still kind of undecided on like how close was that to not just steps in the right direction, but actually like the level you want him to be at. You know what I mean? Like, it was definitely better. Was it good enough if he stays at that level for the Canucks to finish off this series against the Oilers?
Yeah, I get what you're saying, because it comes back to a conversation we've had throughout this postseason where there would even be games, what was it, game one of this series, where him playing with Mikheyev, they were dominating territorially, yep. All the 5-on-5 metrics look good, but it's like, all right, they still didn't score. Mm-hmm. And if you're going to be playing against the third pair and the bottom six regularly, that's where you need to punish the Oilers. And so shots and chances are good, but if you're not scoring, ultimately, what did you accomplish? And so in this game, the one goal he's involved in bounces off his skate, winds up coming to JT Miller. It is the most important goal of the game, not necessarily one where it was this flashy skill play where he demonstrated his absolute
best.
And
it's like he's been in on these late goals,
yes,
but never like the primary assist. It's always been like, well, there's actually never like this a really
signature
subtle
moment,
play.
Right?
Yeah, it's like, if you look, he made a really subtle play, and I'm not trying to downplay those. Those are important, right? And like, he's such a smart player. He's finding ways to make those subtle plays. But as you said, it's not like a, oh, wow, he made that goal, holy cow moment.
I think there's a lot of things he's showed, though, that when you stack them all together, it's highly encouraging, because that's what he does when he's feeling good about his game and he's at his best, right? Like, there were plays in the defensive zone, puck comes to him, he puts it through his own skates and then gets a breakout pass mm-hmm. to someone going through the neutral zone, making plays off the wall. I'd even include the reverse check on Warren Fogle. I know it was penalized. I still think like that's when he's feeling it, he's doing that.
That's part of his game.
That's part of his game. That's a staple of it. And I view that as a positive thing that he executed that and as confidently as it looked, even though he did wind up being penalized for it. Put that all together, I think very encouraging thing. And the way he was stepping into shots, right? There were a few on the power play where right off the draw, it was clearly a set play where the puck would come to Hughes. He'd mm-hmm. instantly get it to him for a one-timer. Doesn't score on it, but like just that aggression and assertiveness, I think is something you can definitely build on. So it's baby steps because he still didn't score necessarily, but I do think it's something where it's like, if he plays this way, goals will come.
Okay, that's the key thing for me. I think that's the first game where I felt that way.
Yeah.
Where it's like, okay, the process is there, just keep doing that and the production will come.
Well, because someone noted when he scored the goal in game two off of the beautiful JT Miller, yep. like fake, passes it over to him, he doesn't really able to celebrate. And generally when a guy scores a goal like that
in the playoffs,
you get like a monkey off the back celebration yep. or something. And he's not necessarily a very demonstrative player. But I think even on that play, you go look at it and it's like, it's a goal, but he kind of whiffed on the puck and it yes. just went in because Stuart Skinner wasn't in the frame. And so it wasn't even something to really celebrate about, because it's like, I still didn't execute and hit the puck cleanly. And so I think he was doing much more of that in this game. So I do think like, you just have to bet on the fact that if he's still getting these opportunities, the goals will come. We're getting late into the postseason now where at some point we'll stop saying that. But I do think, especially playing with the guys he was yes. playing with, that's, I think, the difference here for me as well. It's like, if it's with Lafferty and Mikheyev, I'm not expecting the goals to come. I think if it's with Lindholm and Hoglander, I could talk myself into it.
Yeah, and that line was really good last night. I mean, Lindholm has been just, Rick Tocchet has obviously loved using this guy in all the different situations. Who's made themselves more money in the playoffs, Lindholm or Nikita Zadorov?
Oh, I'd say Zadorov for yeah. sure, because Lindholm hasn't necessarily made himself money.
He's starting to get some
money back that he had already lost. I think Zadorov has got himself into this range where I know the joke was like, oh, the Leafs can't wait to give him 5x5. We're getting into the sixes range.
Oh, yeah.
Like definitely like the Tyler Myers contract that he signed with the Canucks. I think that, and then maybe even then some based on how he's played. And I generally don't like to overreact to postseasons, but like I can't lie, I'm very thoroughly enjoying this run. Like,
oh, he's been a monster. How can you not enjoy it?
Absolutely unbelievable.
He is, yeah. He's like a pig in poop yeah. right now. Like,
oh, just the trolling.
He's just like, is anyone enjoying this more than he is? He's having the time of his life out there.
I think 30 other NHL GMs, because they're watching this and they're being like, I cannot wait.
Yes.
I mean,
can't wait to
Ken
get this
Holland,
guy
did you see that report where like he's the favorite now to beat Columbus?
Yeah.
So even he's probably watched it. He's like, oh, I can't wait to bring him to Columbus.
He's going to fix the problems.
Him and Goodbranson, baby.
All right, let's go. Okay, Oilers. So we've seen already like the kind of classic playoff punch counter punch thing here, right? You know, Chris Knobloch making some reactions when they're down 2-1, gets the big performance. Rick Tocchet goes to the back to the drawing board, gets the big performance from his team. What are Edmonton's options going into game six if they want to tweak things? I know Knobloch alluded to like, hey, we've got some good players who aren't playing. We might need to get them in. I have a question about how effective can Connor McDavid be is he tired? Is he hurt? Like, how high can you put his minutes up? That's a different conversation. But what do you see as Edmonton's options, whether, you know, tactically, personnel, going into game six to make some adjustments?
Yeah, I thought they looked tired. And I know, like, when players don't produce, it's like, all right, he's either hurt or he's tired. But I just think visibly, like, you looked at it and guys like Holloway and Fogle in the fourth line, the fresh players who have played the least in this series, actually look like they could compete with the Canucks.
Yeah.
And the guys who, like, McDavid playing 57 or 58 minutes between games two and three, it makes sense that there's no extra off days in this series either, right? They're playing strictly every other day. Accumulation makes sense. So I just think they need more from them. They had the five power play opportunities they didn't score on. I think that would certainly be a place, a target. It's like, all right, if we can turn this around and get a few easy goals, that would make a difference. Like I said, I think hopefully Ekholm's healthier for them and just able to play his usual allotment of minutes, because I think that'll make Bouchard better, and then that'll make life easier for McDavid and Dreisaitl. So there's a lot of things there where I do think the blueprint is there for them to counterpunch, and it's not necessarily, all right, the Canucks have figured them out and this series is over. Like, I think their best players just need to play better.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of encouraging from the Oilers' perspective, where it might not be realistic to expect McDavid to play 27 high-level minutes at this point, but it's Connor McDavid, so I'd rather bet on that than being like, all right, well, we need our bottom six to step up here, and that's not going to happen. So if their best players can play better, I do think the Oilers have a chance here. Do you want to talk a little bit about Calvin Pickard and the goaltending, though? Because yes. Watching that game and then reading the commentary about it, I felt like I was watching a different game. I know that he stopped 32 out of 35 shots or whatever.
Yeah, Drance was saying also, like, he did not look comfortable.
I'd say about 10 of those were rebounds kicked right out into the middle of the ice that the Canucks just weren't able to get. So if you're watching...
Well, Desharnais pulls one off the goal line.
A couple
right?
posts, yeah. right? Crossbar post. I think if you're the Canucks and you're watching tape preparing for game six in between on the off day, you must just be salivating at the idea of, like, let's just keep doing the pillow passes off of like down low, because he's going to kick it out right into the middle. Mm-hmm. And if we actually get these rebounds, these are very easy goals for us. So not to take anything away from a goalie who got thrown into a tough spot mid-series, hasn't played in a while, very unproven, and still gave them a better performance than they got from Stuart Skinner in any of the three games. But at the end of the day, I think the Canucks have to be looking at that and feeling like, if we play the same way, we're going to score maybe twice as many goals as we scored in game five.
And that's backup life, right? Or in his case, like, he was third string coming into the year, right? And it's like, yeah, you can do a bunch of things well, but there's going to be those vulnerabilities as well. And you're talking about, you know, kicking the rebounds out, I think, especially given some of the struggles from Edmonton's blue line, right? And just like, they break down in coverage sometimes, right? Yep. So those, it's one thing if those rebounds are out there and you trust your defensemen to a certain extent to clear them, but I'm not sure the Oilers do have that trust. So it's, I think it's a good shout by you that, yes, he made a bunch of saves, but there were also some dangerous moments there from Calvin Pickard. Okay, before we go, we're not going to do a draft because Terrence isn't here, and really, what's the point?
It'd be like cheating on him.
If we're not going to demolish him in a draft, what's the point of even doing it?
It's not fun. Taking candy from a baby.
A couple of game sixes tonight. What are you watching for in Panthers Bruins? What are you watching for in Stars Avalanche tonight?
Yeah, I guess I'm curious to see how much of what we saw in games five of each of those series was just a matter of like motivation, where it's just tough to close out a team because their back's up against the wall.
The desperation gap explains so much of what happens in the playoffs.
I think it does, right? Because in particular, like, the Bruins played the best game they played maybe all postseason, but certainly in that series, where they actually were controlling the play for a large chunk of it and weren't just hoping Jeremy Swayman would bail them out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm looking to see if Florida can kind of get back to just dominating the puck the way they did pretty much for the entirety of the first four games of that series. And then in the other one, kind of same deal, right? Where the Avs were clearly desperate. Cale Makar had a superstar performance where he just kind of broke the game open with his skating and was creating opportunities, attacking downhill in the offensive zone. Yet the Stars previously to that had played so well defensively against the team and had really shut them out. And so if they can see that kind of return to form, all of a sudden, I think both of those series could wind up not making to a game seven.
How much are you enjoying the Wyatt Johnston experience for Dallas?
It's been highly rewarding, certainly. It's been fun, as you know, I've been threatening Tom to release
highly
the
rewarded.
Well, I've been threatening Tom to release our texts from like December as like legal court documents showing like him hating on the Stars, being like, I just don't see it. Like, there was that one game they played against the Canucks and maybe around the holidays.
Yeah, it was like early December.
And Thomas Harley finally like played like 21 minutes in that game, and he's like, I just don't see it. Like, you know, this guy makes mistakes. He's so raw. Like, this team just doesn't have juice. And I was like, I'm pretty sure you're
yes.
wrong. And he kept talking about the Kraken as well. I think if I release these documents,
he was high on the Kraken for like way too long. Yes. They were like 10 points out of it. He's like, oh, they can make a run. It's like, they're not making a run.
I think he still thinks the Los Angeles Kings are going to win the West. I don't know if he's been talked out of that. So
he'll be like, oh, it all changed when Logan Stankoven got there. It's like, look, Stankoven's a great player, yeah. but like they were also a good team before that.
Yes. Yeah.
But I don't know. Yeah. Anyways, Stankoven and Tanev have made a big difference. Rupe Hintz, day-to-day, no for Game 6, maybe for Game 7. I know he hasn't been, he was phenomenal last year in the mm-hmm. playoffs. Hasn't been that this year. Like, obviously, they need him back in the lineup, but you have concerns even just about his kind of effectiveness if there is something harming his play a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he relies so much on his skating, right? Yeah. So if he's going to be kind of hampered by that, that's not ideal. I think even though he wasn't producing offensively before this, he had the one big game in this series, but he was so useful just with his speed of being able to kind of just like stick with McKinnon and, you know, carry the puck and enter the zone and just little things like that, where even if he's not on the score sheet, he's a very valuable player to them. And particularly the way he plays with Robertson to kind of compensate for some of his physical limitations. So they certainly need him back beyond this series. I think with the way they're using their lines, they can probably get through the rest of this one without him. But certainly whoever they play in the West Finals starting that series from scratch, I think they're going to need him at least resembling something close to his full form.
Dim, great stuff as always, man. Thank you for doing this. Thank you for officially signaling the arrival of the weekend. It should be an awesome one. Game 6 tomorrow between the Canucks and the Oilers. The Canucks have a chance to crush the Oilers' Stanley Cup aspirations and advance to the conference finals for just the fourth time in franchise history. Massive, massive game. Have a blast. Again, no matter what happens, obviously if there's a Game 7 on Monday or if the Canucks advance, we will be on the air on Victoria Day to talk about it, to break it all down for you. So have a great weekend. Enjoy the game and keep it right here on Sportsnet 650.